Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you. And you too.
Do you know what a frog's favorite day of the year is?
Now, I'm assuming since today is leap year that the answer is going to be leap year.
It's leap day. Yes, not leap year.
Oh, I guess today is not leap year.
It is a leap year.
It is a leap year and leap day, yes.
And today is February 29th.
We were discussing right before we went on the air about dad jokes sucking the air out of the room, and somehow I sucked the air out of the room of something that was about to suck the air out of the room, and that was a dad joke.
Do you know what his favorite music is?
What a frog's favorite music is?
Uh-huh.
No.
Hip-hop.
Oh.
that's all.
Oh, that's all I can say. Well, there's something I found out this week. And it's something I haven't told you yet or mentioned that I have found out. And it was something that, and you've known me for a long time, you've known my lifestyle, how I choose to live it. And so I never thought this was going to be a concern for me. And lately I was having some issues. And so I did some research and found out that I have HPV.
Wow.
And so... And this, I can tell you're actually shocked at this.
I'm actually shocked.
And it is, and how I found this out is that I've been having some foot pain, and I thought it was just because I was getting older and I was wearing just, you know, Vans and Converse and stuff like that, nothing with any foot support, and I tend to walk on the pads of my feet because I tiptoed because it's quieter, and I always hate, I had this habit of doing that because I always lived in upstairs apartments and I always hated people that lived above me, and so I never wanted to be one of those people. So anyway, so the bottoms of my feet have been hurting, and so I started wearing better sneakers, and then I finally took a look at the bottom of my foot and there is a plantar's wart there. And so I Google planter's wart, and it is indeed HPV that I have at the bottom of my foot.
Okay. So how contagious is it?
Apparently, and that's the weird thing, because, okay, so I've had...
My first concern do I have it now?
Do you have it now? No, basically.
Okay.
I've had this once before. I had it in high school or in junior. I can't remember. Have you ever had a planter's wart on the bottom of your foot?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it's basically a little wart that kind of grows inside. So it grows like up, so it's the bottom of my foot is flat, so it's not like the wart that you would get on your finger where it's all like whatever.
Okay.
It just kind of grows inward and it calluses over or whatever, and it just kind of becomes really, really painful. And so I had one a long, long, long time ago, and they usually just go away in a year. So that's what I found out, is that there's like, you can get little things to do, and I'll get into that in a second. But the basic news was, you have this, it might go away. Give it a year or two, they said. And like, it hurts my foot because I'm walking on it. And it's just like, it feels like you have basically a big sliver at the bottom of your foot is what it feels like.
Oh my gosh.
And which is weird because especially at this time of year, I never have my socks or shoes off, and those are clean every day. And like, so it's just a random thing. It's not like everything I touch is turning to warts or anything like that. But it was hilarious because I'd had it before and I just wanted to look up like, oh yeah, what are you supposed to do? You know, does it just go away on itself? And the first thing that comes up was like the WebMD. You have HPV and you will never get rid of it. And I was like, no, I've led such a clean lifestyle. But anyway, so I got the stuff that you just freeze it with. Which comes in a little butane canister or whatever.
And yeah, I've got.
They recommended, you know, 20 seconds on that. So I did it for, you know, a minute and a half and just put a new pad on. And then I found one of my X-Acto knives. And so I kind of cut it out a little bit after I froze it. And it feels... That's what WebMD told me to do.
No.
Is to dig at it with one of the craft knives that you found laying on your desk. So I did that and kind of cut that out, and it's feeling much better today. So.
Oh my word. Okay, so many things. So it's like human papilloma.
Yeah, I had to look it up. Papilloma. Human papilloma infection, they call it, but virus, yeah. Papilloma.
Papilloma virus.
Yeah, so okay. I mean, that's human just... papilloma. And that's, yeah, that's right. The umbrella term for right. A host of terms, one of them, which we generally associate with it, which is not the kind I have. So, anyway.
Okay.
That's it. I found out I have HPV on my foot.
Okay. So... what are the long term, like what's the,
it's basically it's not going to spread anywhere. It's not like if left untreated it's going to spread all over my foot. It's basically just like a tiny infection that lasts there for a long time if you don't do anything about it. I don't know, it's just a bacteria
it's got the word,
it's a virus. It's got it, it's helpful to know since they put it right there in the title. And I didn't look at that, but sometimes it's like athlete's foot or something like that. Like if you're in a, I think probably if I got it in high school, and it could just never appear ever again, except for like randomly, like it does now. But I think it's something that does just stick around. So it would make sense that at some point in junior high or high school, and I would have gotten it, I guess, at some point, and just sharing locker rooms with disgusting other boys. So. Are you afraid of me now?
No.
Putting on a hazmat suit.
So I worked for a while at a youth center, and we talked a lot about STDs and stuff. And I'm sure that HPV came up during that discussion, because isn't there a for women's health? It's a very important test to have.
I think
HPV
so, because
test for ovarian cancer, right?
And that's one of the controversies, is that they want to give the vaccine to young girls,
right?
Because that will
eliminate
quote unquote, you know, whatever the scientific ratio is, but
right.
People are uncomfortable with young girls having HPV vaccines because of reasons, I guess. I don't know. I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about it.
Because they'll get autism. they won't.
They'll get planters warts on the bottom of their feet.
Yeah, okay.
But so they're really weird. They just like grow up into your foot instead of it being like an external thing.
Sounds horrible.
But yeah, well, but I'm glad that it's not just that my feet are getting old, because
now
I feel
guilty about telling a frog joke.
Today of all days, Mark. Right when I'm in the middle of my grief.
Seriously.
My acceptance.
Oh, my word. Okay.
Anyway. I also went to this past week, one of the kids that I nanny had a science fair, and so we went and set him up. And there's two things I learned at the science fair, or three things. One, that a kid had enough resources to build a working wind turbine out of Legos that was like 3 feet tall. But the other one was, one kid had a thing about lightning, and one of his little facts was the inside, or the center of a bolt of lightning is 4 times hotter than the surface of the sun.
I
questioned him on it, him being this really shy, introverted 8-year-old that barely could answer my questions about what is lightning. So I didn't press him too hard on it, but that just doesn't seem like that would be possible. Either the sun's surface is
colder
than I thought, or I don't know what the other options are. It just seems like something that couldn't, like, it seems like that would melt everything around it. Though it was instantaneous.
Literally does.
Well, no. But it doesn't decimate an area like you would think something that is 4 times hotter than the surface of the sun would do.
Okay.
I mean, the sun comes out from behind a cloud and my head.
So it's like high voltage, low current, or high pressure, low water flow. So like if I take a hose and I take a pipe and seal off both sides and then put a lot of water into it. I fill it with water and I raise the pressure of it to, you know, 5,000 PSI.
Okay.
But then I unscrew the cap. It doesn't mean that it's going to flow water through the whole neighborhood. It just means that instantaneously it's going to spurt out. And then because it's a low volume of water, then it's not going to have a huge volume of impact, right? Same thing with voltage is you can have a really high voltage, low current, and
it's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat. And so lightning has, you know, incredibly ridiculously high temperature, but it's not like it's, you know, it covering the state of Arizona. It's like 3 inches in diameter, and it happens instantaneously, and then it's gone.
Well, and I suppose to get all the way to the science fair, I mean, I'm assuming the child was correct. It was one of those things where I just never, like, that none of the parts seemed to fit together in the puzzle he was telling me, and he was unable to. But another one of the kids, actually, it's a friend of the kid that I nanny, had a whole project about gallium, which is the metal that turns liquid at 85 degrees. Have you ever seen that? Like, yeah. Someone will make a spoon out of it or whatever and like stir tea and then it turns liquid or whatever. And so I was so jealous because I walked past it to set ours up. And like, as I walked past it, I think it went, and then they had a little thing of gallium, but then like a thing that said, do not touch.
Do not
and so
touch.
I was not it's, able to play with the gallium. And, so and he was great. They put little,
the
they pushed him out of the way. They had little Hershey's Kisses there, you know, because they were in tinfoil or whatever. And I was like, ooh, how do you get one of those? And he's like, you have to answer one of the questions. And so he said, well, who was the discoverer of gallium? And like on the board somewhere. And it was like some French guy's name. And so, you know, so you had to read the board and answer the question to get a little Hershey's Kiss, which is pretty great. So
nice.
Yeah, that was the science fair, which is always fun. And it's fun. And the classics are still there. The volcanoes, some of them are a little more sophisticated now. But it's still the, you know, the baking soda and vinegar. And then there's the ones about growing. There was a lot of what will plants grow in soda? And
nice.
Like, how much sugar do they add? There's a lot of those. And there was a guy with an alligator there, a little reptile guy that had spiders and alligators. And
remind me about the alligator thing in just a second. Fulgurites, I would love to. So a fulgurite is nature made glass from lightning.
Oh, from lightning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when lightning hits the beach, it takes out the quartz and melts it instantaneously because it's
right.
Three times the surface of the temperature
four,
of the surface.
According four to Nate, times. The 8-year-old.
Nate,
if that is your real name, Nate, your lightning facts.
And so they I've seen them on eBay. They range in size and this stuff. And,
you'd think the Middle East would be full of them.
You would think, and but it's them. Finding them is the hard part. Yeah, whatever. The thing that you're supposed to remind me of
alligator.
So, Jake the Alligator Man.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So we were having dinner last night with Brian Kidd, who's been a guest here as both Brian Kidd and the Unipiper, and he's the Unipiper is going to be part of an event in August. At in Long Beach, Washington, where which is the home of Jake the Alligator Man, which we've talked about on the show, and they have apparently a festival that has all to do with Jake the Alligator Man. So we'll get more details, but save the date that I don't have in front of me, but I will find it.
Save the date for what? You haven't
for,
said what yet.
For Jake the Alligator Man Day. They have a day.
There's an event going on there, isn't it?
There's an event.
Is it a secret event or not?
No.
Is it a parade? Right, but isn't the whole thing that they're like trying to find a spouse? They're trying to marry off Jake the Alligator Man?
I thought
there was like going to be a beauty contest to find.
That's an annual thing.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
I thought it could be.
It could be.
Look it up yourselves. What is this, a podcast?
Jeez, we are useless at this moment. We will find out details, but.
Well, in either case, it's happening when?
In August.
Right.
We don't know when.
Right.
I'll find out details. That's what
details
saying.
To come.
Details to come. perhaps later in this podcast or in the next one. But thank you, Brian, for allowing me to spread not very detailed information about anything.
It's just that attention to detail that you've come to expect.
It's perfect. Okay. So I was recently I got a cold really over a day and I went to bed really early and I got better and I woke up ridiculously early, like 3 or 4 in the morning. And so when I wake up really early, I've got the iPad with the arm over my bed.
which is awesome. This thing is, okay, so I was going to say, for those of you who don't know, which is, I guess, is everyone, because it's in your bedroom, you have an arm that kind of looks like this mic stand arm that we're using, except it comes kind of out and over your head while you're laying in bed, and it holds an iPad.
Right.
So, I mean, basically, you have created the little Wall-E people carrier machine with the screen in front of you, like, in your bed, because it's just...
Right.
Had the arms holding your iPad for you.
We watch movies. That's how I browse Reddit.
But it's one of those things that, yes, it is magnificent, I imagine.
Yes.
But B, you shouldn't. You know? there should be a little thing in your head. Anyway.
Okay. So I'm deep in Reddit. I found weird documentaries and just everything, but one of the articles that was prominent was in Forest Grove, Oregon, which is 45 minutes from here. There's a mysterious sound.
I was wondering because I was Forest Grove, because there's forest everything here. So Forest Heights is the hills. So Forest Grove, where is Forest Grove?
Forest Grove, out to Hillsboro. And then just go bit further. There's
I taught in a school out there.
There's a university out there.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a charming little town.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Okay. I know where that is.
Sake.
is there a ramen place over there?
There's a ramen place on the way. We'll talk about ramen.
I was
later.
So proud of my. I was trying to think of hilarious ramen restaurant titles.
I did see your post.
Ramen chanted evening was my favorite.
That's well played. it's raining ramen. Hallelujah. Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, out in Forest Grove,
there's a mysterious sound that is disturbing neighbors, and it's probably a natural gas pipe that is resonating.
Well, and I mean, it's made national news, and Fun Employment Radio, which I've been listening to all week, has been like doing updates about like what it is and like
the Forest Grove sound.
The Forest Grove mystery sound. So I've been anxiously like watching it unfold.
So I was reading this post on Reddit, and what caught my eye was this other person's story that wasn't directly related to that. And so I'm going to read the story to you, and it's pretty magnificent in my mind. This person claims, and I tried to contact him and he did not respond. And so he just might not be checking his Reddit messages, or he just might be ignoring
things. Are scary.
Thanks. I'm scary. Heard about the arm. He says, "I could find it." That's the title. I bought a house a few years ago. While laying in my bed in the main bedroom, it sounded like a car parked out in front with a loud sound system and a lot of bass on cold Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. So I'd lay in bed, here's music right outside in a car. The first couple of weeks, I got up multiple times to check out front, eventually walking around the block, but further away I got from the house, the less and less I could hear it. I had friends and family try out and confirm I wasn't crazy so other people could hear it. He also measured the bass versus ambient, and it was about 0.2 decibels difference, but it was detectable by an audio meter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I learned after a few months of listening to pop music how to identify some songs from their beat. So he could hear the beat and the bass very specifically, and he was matching.
There
the
used
pop
to be,
songs.
And there probably still exists, and I forget what it's called, but it was an internet site where you can go and tap the space bar according to a song. So if you had like a song stuck in your head, you can tap it out, and it didn't work all that well, but it was kind of interesting, like if you did Mary Had a Little Lamb, but anyway.
Okay. I devised a plan to send 5 sentries by foot through the neighborhood one Saturday. I had them call whenever they found anything remotely sounding like music. An old lady watching Matlock with volume turned up too high. A 16-year-old kid listening to Daft Punk and his 10-year-old Corolla. The teenagers having a house party a mile away. And they would describe this song that they could barely hear. And I would evaluate whether it was the same one I was hearing from the house.
Okay.
So they would call in, he'd confirm.
And say, I hear Chaka Khan. Okay. Right. Is that the song you're hearing?
Exactly. So unsuccessful, we organized with an off-duty police officer another Saturday, this time starting 1.5 miles out, which starts to get into commercial areas of town. There were 6 bars with music playing loud enough to hear from the street, identified as not being the culprit. The 7th bar, about a third mile further as the crow flies, from the house matched 100% on 2 different weekends.
So back up and say that one again.
So a 7th bar that was a third mile further, so a total of 12,409 feet from his house, or 2.3 miles from his house.
Okay.
There's a bar from the house matched 100% on 2 different weekends. Additionally, that bar was not significantly louder than the others on the street. Even though it was 2.3 miles from the house, I could hear it as well as it was in front of my house. He discussed this whole situation with the owner of the bar. He thought I was crazy, and I invited him to check. And he did not.
He did not oblige.
The cause was determined to be from urban terrain acoustic propagation. That was nothing we could do since there were no protections from such phenomena. So in the document, I put a picture of a circle around Portland. Uh-huh. If you put your cursor right in the middle of that circle, that's 2.3 miles to the edge of that circle. So just giving you a...
So it's basically the distance in between the 5 and 205 freeways.
So that's roughly twice. So that's the whole diameter. So if you put your cursor into the middle, so it's half the distance between 5 and 205.
Okay, right.
So basically from here to 205 or like here
the
from our
I-5 interchange.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the cause was determined from the
music cause.
Yeah, that was the cause was from that music and a channel of buildings between that building and his that echoed just right to create a
deliver that sound
to sound directly into his house. So it gets a little bit more interesting. So the business changed hands a few years later, and the new owners at least listened to me. They worked to reposition speakers and install foam sound dampeners strategically to reduce the effect. No change. Then one night, somebody broke into the business through the back doors, and the owners had to replace the back doors, and instantly the effect was gone. Old doors were cheap, empty steel shells that acted like a fourth-order band bass for the subwoofers and reflected amplified resonance through a tunnel of buildings up and down the hills that led to my bedroom on cold nights only when the temperature was just right. And the air density was just right.
Wow.
And when the steel doors were tight like a drum.
Wow.
And so this guy like had the worst of all perfect scenarios of this audio lens coming through the back doors of these hollow steel doors that were amplifying the bass and reflecting them off a series of lenses of buildings heading to his bedroom window.
Wow, that's pretty great.
And I just, I tried to get this person to respond so we could get him on the show and talk about that process and the frustration, and because this lasted for months. He tracked this for months, and then the year and a half later is when the building changed hands and he got
they keep saying that this mystery sound or whatever is just a broken pipe or something like that, but they've interviewed the pipe people or whatever, and they're like, that's not really what it sounds like, and it wouldn't be. And I mean, it's just weird, but it must just be hitting some sort of like perfect storm of occasions that just echoes and amplifies it like that.
Right. And so the sound that they're hearing in Forest Grove is, it sounds like a flute
Do you still have it up? You brought it up.
I did. And it's right here. And I will play it.
That was me.
That was you. And it stopped.
And it's over.
Oh, and it stopped.
It's like the mystery Morse code.
And
so it does have a fluctuation to it. Does it? Oh, I guess it does come to it. So this is an actual
tape. This is somebody recording it with, you know, they've got their phone out.
But yeah,
in a vertical video. Gosh darn it.
That is really weird.
Yeah. So. There,
it's a giant cricket.
It's just the granddaddy of all crickets.
Slowly rubbing its back leg together.
And so, you know, there's a phenomenon of like water hammer. It doesn't sound like water hammer.
Water hammer.
Water hammer is...
Sounds like a band.
It would be a great band name. But water hammer happens in steam piping when the... perfect conditions happen where steam condenses and expands in a resonant way that it can shock a pipe system, and it doesn't sound anything like that.
Okay.
so it's not water hammer.
It does have a much better name though. The water hammer.
The water hammer. But this sounds like a resonance, you know, like a pipe organ.
It's not a tone, obviously, like it fluctuates and it sounds like it comes and goes.
I guess they
released a statement that was like, if anybody's screwing with us,
we will find you.
Wow, that's
there's
hilarious.
Just a flautist that is in the
just practicing the, that one
their,
note
in there
trying to bring Zen to everyone. They're out there with a rake and some sand in their lawn.
Just placing the pebbles perfectly in a Zen way. And then the other thing that I saw while I was deep into Reddit was, you know, they have cat cafes, and we've even got one in Portland.
Oh, right, where it's just a cafe filled with cats that they keep in there, and you go in and be with the cats.
Right.
And have cats in your food and your drink.
Horrible
and
to me.
Everything.
But you like pay to go into the cafe, and then all the cats are for like adoption.
Okay.
And so that's cool. I can totally get beyond that. But in Japan, they've started owl cafes. And so it's
owl.
Like who?
Speaking of resonant noises, there are three, and I'm not quite sure yet what kind of owls they are, that live out by where I live. And when I drive home tonight, I'll probably see them because they patrol the area and they're huge.
Oh, yeah.
They are so loud. And I know there's more of them because they don't live together. Apparently they're living across the field and still shouting at each other all night. Cause it is, I mean, it carries and like, yeah, like you said, on colder night, like depending on the weather or when the wind is going, I mean,
it
I can almost
2.
Not 3
miles
sleep.
Away.
It's not a mystery, you know, but yeah, it is crazy how loud those owls are. So, but now you can go to an owl cafe.
You can go to an owl cafe and they, they've got a series of owls around the room, and you can like...
That seems so dangerous.
It does seem dangerous. And what was more shocking is how tortured the owls looked. Like, they didn't want to be there. They were like...
They're owls.
They're owls. And so...
How does one interact with an owl that doesn't want to be interacted with? Like, it's... Like, it's not like they just roam around because they don't have a choice.
I'll show you the video. It's very disturbing to me because
is that I've seen a GIF going around where it looks like a little boy talking or something like that, and you see the back of the owl's head or whatever, and the dialogue is, yeah, you know, he's very calm, and the owl turns around and has the most gigantic pupils and these bright yellow eyes, and it's just staring at you like it drank like a truckload of caffeine, and it's so funny. Is that what that's from?
It's not.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's not. I know the gift that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not from there, but very similar reaction gifts could be generated from this Owl Cafe video. And but they've got handlers in there, so you can like put on a glove and hold
like I understand the appeal of that. Like, I have a friend that works at the Audubon Society, and she's always posting of like rescued falcons, and like like that seems super interesting to me. I don't know why you want to mix that with eating, though. I mean, like,
right,
that seems like two disparate things that you're trying to peanut butter and ice, you know, peanut butter and pickles. And I like them both, but not
together. They were for sale, but
which
like,
also seems,
but they were ridiculously expensive. Like, there was the owl that was like $15,000, and it was like,
I wanted an owl today, but it was prohibitively expensive. It was unbelievable what they were charging at that owl cafe.
Seems. Yeah, it didn't seem good on any level. There was no benefit there.
That's hilarious. Oh, Japan. Anyway, so today, did you have anything else?
Nope.
Okay, so today I wanted to talk about mob mentality. Because there's been a lot of things just happening in general that I think everyone's searching for answers, because everything seems a little nuts right now and out of control. And I think the good news, bad news is that what we're seeing and what we're a part of right now, kind of as a culture being churned through this election, specifically the election process right now, is just as much of human nature as it's ever been. And that is, what is it like when people get together and individual decisions become these weird exponential mob decisions where it seems like there's control but no control? And it's just kind of a fascinating thing to look at, kind of as it with the election just as a microcosm, because the one thing about all of these psychological things that I like to talk about is that no one's immune to them. I mean, there's a really, really important reason that we as humans act as groups, and that's to keep us alive. We figured out that was a really good way to keep us alive.
Right.
And one of the things that I came across is that it takes 5% of a group to influence the rest of the 95% of who becomes part of that subgroup. So like, if you're in a group of 100 people, and I always picture the flocking, Jurassic Park, like the dinosaurs that are flocking or whatever, and they're like, they flock just like birds or whatever. Like, I imagine that as people. And like, if you see a dinosaur coming out of the woods, those five people on the edge of that 100 freak out, sending panic waves through everyone.
Totally.
Everyone runs, everyone gets that nonverbal message instantly, and that saves you.
I mean,
kind of relying on the group, it's disseminating the information to help as a larger thing. So groupthink isn't like we always think, it's the Nazis, and like, groupthink is everything.
No.
I mean, groupthink is what we wear, what we watch, what we eat, how we consume our media. Like, all of these things are groupthink. You tell me about a TV show, I tell you a joke. And we were watching that thing earlier, in which we'll post a video after this, that's really fascinating about the spread of ideas. And that's kind of what is behind this, is that it's how we spread ideas. And you've read that Malcolm Gladwell book, The Tipping Point,
yeah,
which is all about, that's kind of more specifically about fashion and how fads and ideas in the culture work. But it's still just a fascinating look of who the influencers are. Right. And thinking of an idea, and again, I'll go back to this video, and I can't for the life of me, I can't remember who posted it. So I'm sorry, but somebody sent it to me, and the video is how anger spreads and how ideas kind of go viral. And the simple answer is that there's a couple of things. When we're not invested in something, like we don't have a huge vested interest in the outcome, we tend to go with, well, whatever the group thinks.
Right.
Like, again, we're disseminating that thought process because we don't care enough to like stop our lives and do it. So it groupthink and the other interesting thing that I discovered, and I guess it makes sense, there's no cutoff point for when groups become a cult or when groups become a mob, and that's why
right.
all of us do that. All of us are susceptible to this.
Right.
All of us have these tendencies that make it really, really easy for us to fall into groups, you know, not as easy to fall into violent groups or things like that, but each one is just one step ahead of the other one. So, and because there's no distinguishing thing until it gets, you know, into legal things. But
sure.
That's why, I mean, to look at Donald Trump, say he's the L. Ron Hubbard of politics.
Right.
He is feeding a cult of people in ways that their bodies are, or their brains are already attuned for. And that is messages that rely on emotion and especially anger to get their point across. And in advertising, and both of us have worked in advertising and marketing, mm-hmm. and there's some very basic, they call them advertising appeals, and it's appeal to being rich, it's appeal to sex, it's appeal to safety, all these different appeals that you use to sell a product. So like if you're selling, I don't know, a child safety seat, then you appeal to the safety of your child, or right. you appeal to the fear
right.
that your child will be hurt if you don't have that. I mean, it's very right. It's not all that hidden. I mean, everybody knows that that's how advertising works, but fear bypass our logic
and reason yeah.
and our reason
totally.
And it, again, because we're wired to that, because when you need to make that instant decision of people are absolutely. Running away from that, you don't have time right now to do it.
Right.
excuse me. And so then, so there's a problem with people not being invested because then they just give their decision kind of to the group. But then there's people that are stirring that pot and being angry at things.
Like overly invested.
Overly invested.
Driving
right, because you need, outcome. I mean, and if you think of it as combustion, you need right. fuel for the combustion. You need new fuel,
right.
else it burns out and doesn't go anywhere. So another interesting, and this is politics in general, this is about everything in general, about how when you watch a candidate talk or debate, they'll have ideas that are general. And that's not just because it's hard to say, like, I'm going to do this in the first year, because you can't predict what you'll actually get done. But it's also done very purposely because they want us to fill in the blank. So when they give us a generalized idea, we add all the emotional. It's like giving us something like a toy to dress up. We put all the clothes on. We fashion it in the way that it fits in our brain. So now we can take that idea that now has clothes and detail and things that I care about because I put those things on. I bring it to you now.
Right.
And that idea has made me angry. And so I need to make you angry because I'm angry and I don't know what to do except to talk about how angry I am. And all of that starts fueling each other. And I'll let you actually speak here in a little bit. But the other main point of how mobs get out of control and the largest component of them is called individualization.
Okay.
Boy. which is basically saying that you lose a sense of your own ideals and morals and persona when you become part of a group, which is why at basketball games you cheer and you jump and you make noises that you wouldn't just sitting in your living room, because you're part of that group, you're part of that energy, you're part of something bigger. And one of the things that they found out, because I read a lot of articles on like soccer hooliganism and all those types of mob and that mob mentality. And one of the ways that they decrease the amount of soccer hooligan mobs is that around the stadiums, they will put mirrors and video cameras with displays just showing the crowd. Oh. Because when you see yourself reflected... Right. You aren't part of the group anymore. You see yourself. You see yourself nice. Making this weird decision that, you know, burning a car or looting it because right. your basketball team won. You see yourself, which of course is why everyone always wants to be anonymous, because right. they are not responsible for the actions of the crowd. So like their morals can be set aside because it was the group. Everyone right. was doing right. it. It wasn't me. It was them. But when they see themselves, you're not right. an individual again.
Watching a video of me loot a building
right
is different from,
and so yeah, I found it great that they just put mirrors up
right
and so that you can like you could look at yourself and become part of that.
Is it the bigger the group, the easier the flow? I think of like in The Tipping Point, there was the story of the person being raped, the lady being raped, and right.
Kitty Genovese, I believe her name
and
was.
And so many people witnessed that.
Right. The interesting idea about that story is that I think since then, because that's a huge, her name was Kitty Genovese, and the story was that she was raped or attacked or killed or however in one of the streets in New York, but it was a housing street or whatever, so there was 80, 100 people or whatever in the windows that heard her screams, and no one called the police because they either didn't want to be involved or and most of them just thought, well, somebody else is taking care of it. Someone right. else will do this. I think since then the story has been proven not to be that accurate.
Right.
But I think it's widely understood that the point it was making is studiable, and then it is yeah. all, it's still applicable, but
right.
But yeah, I mean, because that, is the same case of that became somebody else's problem. The right. consequences are right. not mine because I'm part of a group as an anonymous member. And I think there is an actual number of, and I want to say it's like between 15 and 20 or something like that, where right. things start taking place. Huh. Because, and it could be as low as 7. Cause I know your brain likes the number 7 because that's about how many things
It can
keep track of at the same time. Right, and, like
right.
phone numbers and all right. that. So it could be that at that point, the diminishing, you know, returns of your group lessen. But I don't know if that's part of it.
It also seems that like our brains are wired to judge myself on my intentions and judge others on their actions.
Exactly. Which and, is yeah, why when we're driving the street and somebody cuts us off, they're an ass. But if I did it, it was because, oh man, that was an accident. I've never done that before.
Right. And yeah, and I didn't mean to cut them off. I didn't see them right. or right. whatever. And so as humans, we're kind of myopic and a little short-sighted about empathy and mm-hmm. those ways right. of being able to put myself in their shoes and experience it from their perspective.
It's hard even when you know, like I do this all the time. If I'm sitting at a traffic light or something and you look at the guy next to you and you just try to realize and comprehend that they're just as introspective and just as all of these human things that you are, like
right.
just as complicated, have seen just as many, like all of these things. It's not just the guy in the car, like the background actors of the movie.
Right.
It's like that guy's going somewhere right now for some reason because it's
there's a story.
It's
there.
Almost crippling to think
right.
to think that way. And that's probably another reason our brains do that right. because it will cripple
us. We just think it's the white Honda.
Right. right.
That white Honda.
Exactly.
Did that to me.
He left his house purposely to cut me off.
What a jackass.
Honda. But yeah, it's that same. Huh. Well, and mob mentality kind of works in that in that same way, in that road rage way, where if you're in, they did a study where if you're in a convertible versus you're in a car with tinted windows, and guess which one your behavior is worse in? It's the tinted windows, because you're anonymous and no one can see you. Whereas if you're going down the road in a convertible like my old Jeep, you're not flipping people off and you're not shouting at people, and because you're a part then of what's going on around you, you can't be anonymous anymore.
Right. So are there mechanisms to like catch yourself? I remember as a teenager, I was obsessed with trying to have dreams that I could be cognizant of.
Right, lucid dreaming. Right.
And I was like fascinated with it and really, really wanted.
Were you ever able to do
lucid
it?
Dreaming?
I've always wanted to do that
on
too.
Multiple occasions.
I feel like it's one of those things like hypnotism, though, where maybe it works, but you have to be a believer. And I think I'm just too skeptical.
No, I've been. You know, I've had multiple lucid dreams.
Really?
And they're amazing.
You know what I have been trying to do, because I've always had trouble sleeping. And so one of the things that I've been trying to do is to realize and remember the moment you go from, you know, just thinking about stuff into falling asleep, like where those things kind of the hazy edges.
I love that.
Because if you're too aware of it, then you'll wake yourself up.
Right. Oh yeah.
But yeah. So it's just so interesting to me.
So one of the practices that you can do for lucid dreaming is, on a frequent basis, even when you are very, 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 very aware that I'm awake right now and not dreaming, I'm not asleep.
Right.
Is you come into the habit of doing some tests to see if you're dreaming, so that becomes a practice and a habit that then you would recognize and do that practice and habit while you're sleeping, while you're dreaming. And then you would recognize at that moment that you are in fact dreaming. And so if you look at something and recognize it and detail what it is, and you look away, and then you look back at it and compare those two versions of what you are looking at. In a dream, those frequently are not the same thing. Look at something, I look away, I look back, and it's very different.
Interesting.
Right? And if I'm not dreaming, the persistence of that thing remains, right. and it's different. And so you build this habit of checking whether you're dreaming or not,
right.
while you're awake, and hopefully that becomes
a habit in your dream.
And so I did have a point to this of, is there a mechanism or a technique like that for me to check myself against this mob mentality? And so behind me is literally in the window a Bernie Sanders poster.
It was behind the curtain. He did the curtain reveal there.
Behind me is a Bernie Sanders poster pointing out to the street, and I'm a Bernie fan.
Right.
But am I a Bernie fan because of my own my own
rugged individualism.
Right. Or am I just a lemming that's a sheeple out, following the crowd?
Right. Well, no, and that's a good question. And I think the maddening part again is not only is that we all have these tendencies,
right,
and that they play into the things that we already want to hear. I mean, that's the danger, is that one of the most chilling stories, I think I might have told this before, but in college, I was in a play about the Dutch resistance in World War II. And during the course of that, we traveled around to like 40 different cities in the U.S. and did the play. And in one of the events, they had a question and answer with the real lady who the play was about, who a war survivor. And her husband were both sent to concentration camps, and the husband died, blah, blah, blah. And she told a story about during one of the war crimes. And I know this is a famous story, and I'm probably getting some of the details wrong. One of the, German guards, one of the upper, more powerful ones, was on the stand or whatever. And there was a survivor in the galley in just watching the trial. And they were questioning the guy on the stand, and he was answering, and all of a sudden the guy, the Jewish survivor, just broke out into tears and was weeping and all that. And they asked him, you know, are you crying because you're finally seeing, you know, the guy who was always your captor? You know, is it all these emotions of this man, you know, seeing evil in the face? Is that when he said, no, I see a guy that is me. And I see a guy who was born somewhere else and got swept up into this thing. I see that that evil lives in every single one of us. And that's why I'm crying.
Right.
And that I just remember that story because that's what it is. Nobody thinks of themselves as the bad guy. Nobody thinks of themselves as part of a thing, of an unthinking thing that they can't control. So while part of the appeal is the loss of this individual, there still needs to be that emotional investment. And that's why all of this stuff is emotional. So being aware, I mean, just like with advertising, being aware when someone, okay. So like if I go, I never go out. Like when we went out to dinner yesterday, it was like the first time I've been out in a long time. So like if I was out at a bar or I was out at a restaurant and some very attractive lady came up to me and started hitting on me, right. Don't ever do the I'm revealing my breast with my hands gesture again, because that was terrifying. But if a very attractive woman came up and started like openly hitting on me, I would be like, come on, like what are you doing? Why are you doing? Like, I would obviously wonder what was behind it, because it's unusual, especially if it was like overtly, you know, whatever. I would say, why is she trying to appeal to me so much?
Right.
What is she trying to get out of me? And that's the basic question. That's what advertising. Wait a minute. That was an appealing ad. What are they trying to get out of me? Right. What are they selling to me?
Cigars.
Sometimes that cigar was not a cigar, but two breasts that showed up at the cigar shop for
you. Exactly.
That was a backstory of something that happened to Mark this past week. That, speaking of shocking revelations. But I mean, it is that basic question, like why? And so with the Bernie Sanders, with the politics things, is that it gets us all fired up and emotional, all of us, no matter where we stand, because it's maddening. We're powerless. We can't do anything. We don't feel like our voice is being heard. So when somebody is saying something that sounds like our voice, we want to rally around that. We want to be part of that, even if that voice doesn't make sense, but emotionally is there. That's why you hear the, he's saying like it is, he's not afraid. You know, people are not, he's not saying a whole lot of concrete things, but they're not saying, I like his policy about this. They're saying, I like how he's emotional is basically what it's coming down to, because it's putting a face on this emotion that we can't do anything with. And we don't have a name or a face of inside us. It's just ugly anger, or it's, you know, fill in the emotion. It's wonderful happiness or whatever it is that they're trying to sell. And right now we've developed a nation that sells fear and anger. I mean, that's what fuels our politics and our news, because our news fuels politics, which fuels our news, which fuels our anger and rage,
and which fuels ratings, which is where the advertising dollars are.
Right.
And I want to watch something that makes me engaged to it, and whether I'm fearful or whatever.
Yeah. I have, there's a list of, let's see, 8 different, when they were checking what makes a viral post, they were studying like what are the components of it. And there's 8 different kind of emotional appeals, going back to the emotional appeals, that they ranked of what make something popular and what is most likely. And so they somehow measure the percentage change in probability of virality. And so starting with, we'll go from low to high. So, sadness as an appeal that people share to one another is the worst. And that was -16%. So that is this is like when you post something on the internet, sad things don't go viral unless it's like one of the terrible one share, one prayer equals one like. That's a different show, that one. So we have sadness at -16. Something that shows positivity has a 13% I don't know what percent chance, whatever we're calling it. Better chance. Surprise is 14%. So we had positivity and surprise, which are kind of the same. Then we have anxiety, which pushes it up to 21% more likely to go viral. Interest, which is 25%, which is probably, I would assume, I don't know, what
some,
you call
something
interest?
That I'm something that I'm interested in, or you know, like
airplanes or something like that. Right. Okay. Then we get into awe, which are the seven things that will blow your mind, or doctors hate this, and that's 30%.
That's AWE, not AWE.
Yeah, the awe. Oh, all the awe would probably be a component too. I suppose it would be positivity.
Right.
But yeah, awe is at 30%, which is basically all the clickbait headlines of "you won't believe this." So or we have two explosions. Less. So we're at 30% now. 30% more likely to go viral when you use the emotional appeal of awe. We have two left. We have practicality, which is at 30%, which is a lot of the do-it-yourself stuff, the recipe stuff, the life hacks.
Right.
Breathe oxygen when you're exercising, or whatever those are. and then so that was at 30%. Now we have the number one at 34%, which is anger. So anger by far makes things spread. And like we were watching in that video that we'll link to, how just like germs, if you view ideas as germs, they will change and evolve just like germs do. So that little nugget of anger, or that little nugget of, they were saying, like the cat picture, the picture by itself is great, but when somebody adds that, you know, hilarious little headline to the cat picture, then it spreads even more. So when I give my anger to you, you put some more clothes on it in your head because of your emotions. You spread that.
Right.
It's even more effective now. And so now everyone's sweeping around each other, just kind of continuously infecting each other with their ideas. And also those, the opposing ideas meet and fuel each other. So now you just have a perpetual motion machine of anger that fuels each other and outrage that fuels each other.
It's all
so, I mean, that's
so much.
It is.
Yeah. And
I mean, it's so simple, but like when you look at the act, which is why, like, to see it happening in real life is fascinating, but scary. But it's that same, like, I get swept up in it too. Like, so where am I being, like,
exactly
a crazy person that is refused? We were talking about the show, like, anything that you show to a true believer, no matter what it is going to fuel their belief. It's either going to, they're going to either say, well, look at that, you know, that place that did that. Of course, that's those people. And that bolsters it. And like, so everything you do bolsters that.
So I invite anyone to call me out on my crazy so that I'll be angry back at you and we can argue about it.
You could fuel some rage together.
And because you won't change my mind.
Period. Well, but that's the other thing, is that if you found that you haven't really looked at your idea, like I think about the fact that Aaliyah, that I feel like I'm really lucky that I grew up in a completely different type of environment that I live in now.
Right.
Because I really see the value in a completely different way of life, a completely different way of thinking, just like I can see it differently now that I live in Portland, where things are completely different. I totally lost the thread of that. Whatever I was going to say there. Anyway. Why did I start that?
You're thankful.
Oh, no. So my thought process and my beliefs are fundamentally the same as they were when I was young, but they're augmented and they're different and they've grown, and a lot of them have changed with new information and all that. And so I think, to go back to your, like, how do we make sure we're not swept up in it, is to think, well, when's the last time I've really, really examined the way that I've thought? Do I know people who think way differently that are smart and that I respect, and they can give the points of that side? Because part of the whole rage fuels rage thing is that we develop these straw men, which, you know, an easily defeatable opponent that doesn't exist in real life, like the guy on the corner of the street that's selling drugs to chill. Like, we're creating these people that don't exist because we don't know any. Right. And I think that was my point. Like growing up, I know a lot of people that feel solidly and have really good reasons right. for believing a way right. that's completely different than someone here now who right. also has very good reasons for believing
Absolutely.
What they believe.
And that's,
when
that's
you start
a good point.
Believing the other side's right. the other side has no valid point, has nothing to say, has right. nothing reasonable. Like even with what's happening with the Republican Party right now, that to me is different than people who are quote unquote Republican or who are Republican back in the Absolutely. 80s or 90s. Like that's a different thing to me. Like the machine is different than when I go back and talk to my family and hear like, oh yeah, there's reasonable people who are not like crazy, you know, this. And like when I tell them of Tales of Portland and how like it's not this or that, it's like it's just getting to know people who are different than you, but allowing that they have valid points, but to find people that do that well. And I think that's the difficult part, is that I don't think anyone's doing it well at this point, because it's just this rage inferno. So, I mean, I guess that's what I would say, is like find somebody who thinks differently than you and puts it in an intelligent way that you can look at the facts of it and just strip the emotional appeal out of it, because it all comes back to the emotional infection. And when you have emotion overriding all of your logic.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. And I would say I would hope that I wouldn't get caught up in things like that. But I know that I'm just
right.
a big bag of chemicals as a human.
Right. Well, and that's part of it, is knowing that just like HPV, it shows up in many different forms, and all of us, no matter what kind of lifestyle we have,
right.
can be victims to it. But I mean, right. Things like that, both advertising and politics and anything like that, wants you to be on autopilot.
Right.
And
it's
our job to not be on autopilot.
Just having an honest self-evaluation
right.
and comparison with somebody else that be open to hearing other points of view.
Right. And just being aware of the things that poke at your emotional side. Because, I mean, there are people on Facebook, like there's one lady who is like the physical manifestation of the straw man that I have about a certain group of people. And so whenever this person posts something, I'm just fascinated and infuriated. And I want to type out and show them that they're wrong on the internet. And I mean, it takes everything in me,
of course,
because it pokes at all of those emotional things in my head right. that I'm already, you know, so worked up about. So, so please be aware of it, but
please be aware.
No, I mean, but it is interesting. And I think another thing that we all in the modern era, we think that since we have computers and technology and science, that like, we're not dumb humans like we've always been. Like people who lived back then weren't dumb, they
right.
just lived in different times, like, and right. so to pretend that everyone was just so stupid, I could never be swept up in the witch trials, like
right.
I can super full-on easily see how a large portion of this country could be swept up into something
Absolutely.
Like the witch trials. Anyway, so that's kind of it on the mob mentality.
Yeah. And I think it's a topic, you know, it's a lifetime experience journey. It's
right.
not an event.
Right.
And so I think it's something that we can come back to over
well,
time.
It, yeah. And, well, it's not going to go away. That's for sure. We'll be here next week, as will it. anyway. So let's do some news story. Usually you have some local things. I found a local thing because there is a new restaurant coming to Tualatin. Could be. It could be coming to Tualatin. We're waiting with bated breath.
What's the new restaurant?
The new restaurant is Cracker Barrel. The West Coast is finally going to be getting a Cracker Barrel, maybe in Tualatin. Now, when I went to, where did I go? I was in Dallas. I was visiting friends with Dallas to get some teeth worked on by my friend. And one of my bucket list things was to go to Cracker Barrel because it seems fascinating. You hear stories about it. It's kind of the same as Waffle House. I've never been to a Waffle House.
Right.
I've always wanted to. So I finally got to go to a Cracker Barrel, which was just kind of whelming. I was a little disappointed. But apparently Tualatin may be getting the new Southern themed Cracker Barrel restaurant of our own.
What do you eat at a Cracker Barrel?
A Cracker Barrel is like Southern foods, like grits and biscuits and gravy and sausages, and it's I would say the stereotypical Southern food, the Southern fare, hush puppies and just tons of fried stuff and grease and nice. Gravy and I did have the biscuits and gravy there because ever since I had it at Pine State, I've been curious about it. And it was terrible. It was not very good. Not very good at the Cracker Barrel, surprising that. And then I took a really cool, they had little tiny salt and pepper shakers that said Cracker Barrel that I put in my luggage. But I think one of the kids at the family I was staying with found it and used it for their doll stuff. So I couldn't say, I'm taking that home with me because I wanted a little souvenir.
Nice.
So the Cracker Barrel could be coming to a town near us, Tualatin.
So, coming up on August 5th and 6th.
Oh, yeah. I did have that.
Jake celebrates the 10th annual.
Jake the Alligator Man.
The 10th annual 75th birthday.
Is he Nick?
I think so.
Wow, turning 20 again.
Yeah. This year will be bigger and more entertaining than ever. So, out in Long Beach, Washington on August 5th and 6th. So now it's time to make your reservations out there before.
Oh, there'll be a car show too and a burlesque party.
Car show, burlesque party.
Annual car show. And the annual Bride of Jake contest. That's where that is. Okay,
right.
But yes, our friend Brian will be leading the parade for Jake the Alligator Man August 5th and 6th maybe. So
awesome.
Cool. Well, I had one more story here that is kind of terrifying, and it's about an animal that I already found kind of terrifying, and that is crows. And
we've been having an animal in our attic, and we think
we've been having an animal in our attic. Like
we think it's a
like
crow.
You're inviting it.
No, he's been in like scratching in the.
Is it a woodpecker?
No, we think it's a crow because Nick saw a crow fly out of some eave, and so we think we've got a crow that visits in our attic. Okay, and
it would be really likely because if you know crows and that's what the story is about are terrifyingly smart. And they can recognize people by face. They used to do this. They did this great experiment where this guy at a university put a really ugly mask on, and he went out to the courtyard. Have I told this story before on the air?
I think so, but no.
But he was like super mean to the crows. Like he would throw things at him and like do all these things in this crazy old man, like ugly mask. Then he would go out as himself and throw some bread out, be nice to them, whatever. After a while, even when he would put on his ugly man face and just walk through the courtyard, like for months, the crows would like go around him and peck at him and they were angry because they recognized and remembered their grudges. So now we have this story. Crows understand analogies. A recent research collaboration between Moscow State University and here at the University of Iowa have discovered that crows exhibit strong behavioral signs in analogical reasoning, the ability to solve puzzles like a bird is to the air as a fish is to blank. Analogical reasoning is considered to be the pinnacle of cognitive development, and it only develops in humans between the ages of 3 and 4, which always makes it hard to teach Sunday school class because you can't use metaphors. Anyway, crows are reputed to be clever. Aesop's fable, Aesop wrote one of a story of a crow solving a challenging problem, which I've seen videos of this. A thirsty crow will drop pebbles into a pitcher with water near the bottom, raising food that is floating on top. So if you give them like a beaker or whatever and put food at the bottom, they'll fill stuff in so that the water level will raise and they're able to get the food. So such casual understanding is no minor feat. Children struggle with a task like this until they're about 5 years old. Furthermore, crows are renowned for their crafting and using of tools. I read another story about a little girl who would throw stuff out to the crows, and the crows brought something back made out of the stuff that the girl was throwing at them.
Jeez.
So where are we here? They can carve thin strips of wood into skewers and bend wires into hooks to get food. Yeah, they've done that before. All right. So the study's authors first trained hooded crows on several tasks, which they had to match items that were the same as one another. The crows were presented with a tray with three cups. The middle cup was covered with a card with a color. And then the other side, the cups had the same color, and then the same corresponding color would have the thing under it. So if you had three cups, the green one over here had something under it. The crow would figure out, oh, the green one over there has the same thing. So they were able to find things that were similar, and they quickly chose that task. Well, then they changed it so that there was a pair of items. There would be a card with AA on it, and there would be a card with CD on it. Then on the other side of the table, there was a card with BB on it and another one with EF. And so the relationship between one pair of the items, where did this go? For instance, if the middle card displayed a circle and a cross, the correct choice on the other side would be a square and a triangle as opposed to something that had two squares. Not only could the crows correctly perform this task, and for instance, matching the AA card with the BB card as opposed to the ED, not only could crows correctly perform this task, they did so spontaneously from the very first presentation without ever being trained to do so. And then my editor's note, we are all going to die. because of their totally. Initial training, they were figuring out, oh, we're problem solving. This is the next level.
They started correcting the test, they got their
tiny red pens and scratching it out.
It would be more accurate to
using the little pyramid of three dots for therefore or whatever. I remember the first time I saw that in physics in high school, the teacher used that, like therefore. The three dots. Yep. And I was like, what is that? They're like, it's therefore. And like, I couldn't figure out, because to me, it seems like it takes just about as much time to do either one. And so I had a whole problem with it and I didn't believe him anyway. But yeah, so crows, I mean, between crows and octopus, I mean, if they can figure out like written or verbal communication, and we could realize how smart these animals are, we would be terrified.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, animals that can recognize you and carry grudges and problem solve using analogies. I mean, holy crap. That's terrifying.
That's the worst.
Oh, man.
Well.
Anyway.
Thanks for joining us on the Mark and Todd cast.
I'm Todd.
And I'm Mark. And come visit us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Mark and Todd cast.
Yes, and like it so that you can get a notification for a new show every week, usually on Monday evenings. And spread the word, too. We've been hearing from lots of you about listening to the show.
Totally.
Spread the word. Subscribe on Facebook. You can also just stream it on our page or download from our page at Mark and Toddcast or
themarkandtoddcast.com,
which I'm glad you get to say now. See, isn't it more satisfying to say it that way?
It's good.
All right. I don't have anything to play us out with. Do you?
Nope.
Give any music or anything?
Nope. I've got the whistle sound.
I thought about the whistle sound. I'm going to hold on a second.
Fix us in post, right? Yeah.
Man, so I'm just going to see if there's any songs for Jake the Alligator Man. No, that was it. Oh, here's something called Jimmy C. Newman with Alligator Man. We'll see you next time.
Mosquitoes buzzing round my Spanish moss for my bed. Very seldom see dry land, 'cause I'm an alligator man. I hunt the gator all night long, sell his hide and then I'm gone. See the bells from Bayou Shan, they love this.